The pressure builds in small, sharp ways, long before anyone calls it a crisis. A mother in Kingston waits outside a clinic at 6:12 a.m., rocking a tired child on her hip, while counting the minutes before her shift. Another in Chicago stands at a bus stop, in the dark, scrolling through a phone that holds no backup plan, no sitter, no relief. Different cities, same wait. The world expects them to keep moving, to stretch their hours, to smile through the strain. No one asks how long a person can hold that line alone. The breakdown doesn't come with drama. It comes with the quiet moments when help should exist and doesn't. When a sick child means lost wages, when a closed community center means another week of scrambling, when every service requires patience that exhausted women no longer have. The question sits heavy. What happens to mothers when survival replaces support? And what does it say about a society that tells them to endure it without a village? Chapter 1, The Quiet Crisis. The morning heat settles early over Seaview Gardens. Traffic moves slow. Vendors set up at the corner. A mother steps out of a narrow walkway with her son held close, backpack straps digging into her shoulder. She keeps her eyes forward. She has an 8:30 shift downtown and a 40-minute commute if the taxi route runs clean. It rarely does. She checks the time, 7:04 a.m. She has already been awake for 3 hours. The sitter who usually helps dropped out last week. Money trouble, family trouble. She didn't give details. She only said she couldn't manage anymore. The mother tightens her grip on her son and walks faster. She can't miss another day of work. 2 absences and her supervisor starts writing reports. 3, and she loses her position. She has no backup plan. Her cousin says she can save the world and harm the world even more. Her mother works private home care and sleeps at her job 4 nights a week. She thought about asking the neighbor again. But the last time she did, the woman hesitated before agreeing. The hesitation told her everything. People have their own loads. The village she grew up hearing about is no longer steady. By the time she reaches the taxi stand, the line has doubled. School runs always slow the morning flow. She keeps checking the time. 7:12 a.m. 7:19. Her son leans his head on her shoulder. She whispers that everything will be fine. She doesn't believe it. The pressure never leaves. It just settles in the chest and waits. Across the ocean, the same morning tension unfolds in a different kind of cold. On Chicago's south side, a mother stands at a bus stop with her daughter, bundled in a coat the child will outgrow by winter. She works 2 part-time jobs because neither offers enough hours to stand on its own. One starts at 9, the other at 4:30. Both expect her to be flexible. Neither provides childcare support. She used to rely on her sister, but the sister moved to Indiana for cheaper rent. The mother hasn't found anyone since. Trust is expensive. She can't risk leaving her daughter with someone she doesn't know. The bus is late again. She pulls her gloves tighter and checks the weather update on her phone. Wind chill makes the morning feel worse. The screen shows a message from her manager reminding her about last week's lateness. She didn't bother explaining. He wouldn't understand. And she's tired of proving that she's trying. She deletes the message and waits. The wing cuts across her face. Her daughter shivers against her side. Both women stand in different cities, different economies, different histories. Yet the core pressure matches. They are expected to solve everything alone. The world praises resilience but offers little structure behind the word. Most days feel like a countdown. You keep moving because the alternative makes no sense. You hold the pieces together because someone has to. You carry the load because no one else will. In Kingston, the taxi finally pulls up. The mother climbs inside, holds her son close, and tries to calm her breathing. She calculates the time. If traffic is light, she can still make it before 8:30. If the route slows, she will have to run from halfway tree to the office. She tells herself to stay focused. The day hasn't beaten her yet. But she knows the fight never stops. Every task has a cost. Every delay builds new tension. When she reaches the office, her shirt is damp from rushing. Her son stays with a coworker for the first hour. It is not ideal. It is the only option. She thanks the woman and sits at her desk. The fluorescent lights hum overhead. Papers stack beside her. Calls start coming in. She takes a deep breath and starts the day. In Chicago, the bus arrives 12 minutes behind schedule. The mother steps inside with her daughter and tries to shield her from the cold draft coming through the door. She watches the city blur past the window. Brick buildings, snow piled along the sidewalks, people rushing to work. She feels herself merging into the background. Another person fighting through the morning with no cushion to soften the strain. At 9:07 a.m., she clocks in. Her manager looks at her but says nothing. She keeps her head down and gets to work. She organizes deliveries. She handles customer complaints. She moves with the urgency of someone who knows that mistakes have consequences she cannot afford. The pattern repeats for both mothers. Long days, tight budgets, childcare gaps, transportation trouble, limited community support. Kingston and Chicago carry different rhythms, but the load feels the same. The breakdown doesn't come from one large hit. It grows out of the daily erosion, the long lines, the closed doors, the crowded clinics, the missed calls, the bills that rise, the help that disappears, the hours stretched until they snap. Data from both regions shows the same curve. Urban isolation for mothers has increased over the past decade. Support networks shrink as cost of living rises. Community structures thin out. Informal care arrangements collapse under economic strain. Public programs stay overloaded. The numbers point to a quiet crisis, not dramatic enough to dominate headlines, but heavy enough to bend women under the weight. In Kingston, the mother overworks to keep pace with rising prices. Bread, milk, transport. Everything bites into her pay. She tries to save, but never gets ahead. On her lunch break, she calls the sitter who said she might return next week, but the woman isn't sure. She has her own responsibilities. The uncertainty hangs in the air. In Chicago, the mother calculates her week while folding stockroom boxes. Rent takes most of the paycheck. Groceries take the rest. She wants to find a long-term childcare option, but the nearest center has a waitlist stretching past 6 months. Another center across the city costs more than she earns. She keeps searching but finds nothing that fits the reality she lives in. Both women navigate systems that assume they are not tired, not overwhelmed, not holding their lives together with whatever thin thread remains. The pressure becomes routine. You don't call it stress. You call it life. Evenings add another layer. In Kingston, the mother returns home with her son. She cooks dinner, helps with homework, washes uniforms, and checks her schedule for the next day. She hopes the neighbor might help again, but decides not to ask. She doesn't want to strain the relationship. Everyone around her is stretched thin. In Chicago, the mother finishes her first shift, picks up her daughter, and heads to her second job. The commute drags. By the time she reaches the restaurant, the dinner rush has started. She ties her apron and jumps in. Her daughter sits in the back with a coloring book. It is not an ideal arrangement, but it is the only way to keep the lights on. She tells herself she will find something better. She doesn't know when. Night falls. Both mothers move through their routines with the same quiet resolve. They collapse into bed hours after their children sleep. Their days feel long, their futures uncertain, their support systems thin. Kingston and Chicago look far apart on a map, but the emotional geography matches. The burdens mirror each other. The cracks widen the same way. The question rises with the same weight in both cities. How long can mothers keep going without a village behind them? The line holds for now, but pressure builds. Something has to give. Chapter 2. The Systems That Fail Them. The cracks show long before anyone inside the system admits they exist. In Kingston, a community worker sits behind a metal desk in a cramped office near 3 miles. She has spent the morning sorting intake forms from mothers who need help with childcare, food support, or after-school programs. Most requests can't be answered. Funding runs short every quarter. Staff numbers drop. Programs shrink. She knows the mothers by name, knows their routines, knows their exhaustion. She has watched the workload rise while the resources fall. She receives a call from the mother in Seaview Gardens. The woman asks if the community center will restart its afternoon program. The worker hates giving the same answer again. She explains that the program is still suspended due to staffing gaps. She can hear the silence on the other end, a silence shaped by fatigue, not anger. The worker wishes she could offer something, but the truth stays the same. The system wasn't built to support the load these women carry. Across the ocean, a social service advocate in Chicago sits in a shared office space with peeling paint and a failing heater. She has stacks of case files spread across her desk. She marks notes about mothers unable to secure childcare. She highlights the cases where waitlists stretch past half a year. She prepares talking points for a meeting with a regional agency, though she knows the meeting will end with the same lines about limited funding and long-term planning. The pace at which support arrives never matches the pace at which mothers need it. She saw the Southside mother last month. The woman came to the office in tears after a sitter canceled twice in 1 week. She didn't need therapy. She needed stable childcare she could afford. The advocate helped her apply to 3 programs. 2 were full. 1 required transportation she didn't have. The woman left with brochures and a strained smile. The advocate knew it wasn't enough. In Kingston, the community worker remembers a proven obstacle that repeats year after year. Transportation. Mothers without cars lose hours in transit. Taxis run late. Buses overcrowd. A single detour can throw off an entire day. She has watched mothers beg drivers to stop closer to their workplace because they are running late. She has watched them walk long stretches with children in tow because the money for a second taxi simply doesn't exist. She calls it structural punishment. The city never planned for their realities. In Chicago, the advocate sees another layer. Employer practices. Part-time jobs with fluctuating schedules. Shifts that change with 24 hours notice. No guaranteed hours. No guaranteed stability. The companies stay within legal limits, but the human cost builds. The mother from the bus stop told her about a week where her start time moved from 9 to 7:30 without warning. She couldn't find morning childcare in time. She lost 1 shift, then another. Her manager marked her file. She felt herself sliding toward consequences she couldn't stop. The investigative pattern forms clearly. The failures are not mysterious. They are documented. They repeat. They shape mothers' lives in both cities. Wait lists, cost barriers, transportation gaps, employer pressure, underfunded programs. These issues show up in reports, community surveys, and government audits. The facts do not need speculation. They sit in plain view. The midpoint turn lands in Kingston. The Seaview Gardens mother reaches a breaking point in the middle of a weekday. Her sitter promised to return temporarily. She agreed to take the child for half the day. But when the mother reached her workplace at 8:32 a.m., her phone vibrated. A message from the sitter. Emergency. Can't make it. The mother froze. She had already clocked in. She asked a coworker for help again, but the woman could only take the child for 30 minutes. After that, she had her own responsibilities. The mother panicked. She could feel the room closing in. She knew her supervisor would ask questions if she left early again. She walked outside and sat on a low wall, her son leaning against her. Sweat ran down her back. She called the sitter again. No answer. She considered asking her mother, but the older woman was working a long shift in the hills. There was no one else, no safety net, no plan. She swallowed her frustration and carried her son back to the office. She prepared to explain everything. She knew the risk. The supervisor looked at her with tired eyes. He told her the company understood her situation, but had limits. He allowed her to stay for the day, but warned her that things needed to stabilize. She nodded, holding her son's hand. She did not argue. She had no strength left for that. She knew she was one more crisis away from losing everything. In Chicago, the midpoint crisis lands with equal weight. The Southside mother receives a message from her second job. Her shift is canceled for the evening. The supervisor claims they overstaffed. She knows the truth. Last week, she asked to swap a shift so she could attend a school meeting for her daughter. The supervisor didn't like it. She feels the retaliation press against her. She stares at the message. No shift means no pay. No pay means rent trouble. She calls the advocate. The advocate listens, writes notes, and reminds her of her rights. But she also knows the legal protections rarely apply cleanly. The woman is trapped between needing the job and suffering under the job. The stress circles back to the mental load. Studies from health agencies in both countries show the same pattern. Mothers carry the schedule, the transportation planning, the meal planning, the emotional care, the household tasks, the school updates, the medical appointments, the emergencies, and the problem solving. The load grows heavier in households with limited support networks. Researchers note increased anxiety, fatigue, and burnout in mothers without reliable assistance. The findings confirm what the stories already show. The cost isn't emotional weakness, it is structural strain. Interviews reinforce the point. The Kingston community worker has seen mothers break down at her desk, not from dramatic crises, from small failures that stack too high. The bus that came late, the sitter who quit, the clinic that closed early without notice. She calls them pressure cuts. One cut doesn't break you. 1,000 quiet ones do. The Chicago advocate echoes the same truth. She has watched mothers navigate systems that demand patience they no longer have. She has seen them apologize for needing help. She has heard them describe the exhaustion of explaining themselves to people who don't understand. She knows the city has programs on paper that do not translate to real solutions. She calls it paperwork without protection. The investigative question tightens. If the systems are known to be failing, who is accountable? The failures are not new. They are not hidden. They repeat the same way in Kingston and Chicago. They form a pattern so consistent that mothers can predict the next obstacle before it arrives. Yet, accountability remains diffused. Government agencies cite limited budgets. Employers cite business needs. Community centers cite staffing shortages. Everyone acknowledges the problem but points elsewhere for the solution. By late evening, both mothers feel the day's wait long before they reach home. The Kingston mother replays the morning crisis. The Chicago mother wonders how many shifts will disappear next month. Neither has the luxury of slowing down. They keep moving because survival demands it. The systems behind them remain thin, stretched, and unreliable. The chapter closes with the same unresolved tension that started the day. The failures are documented. The patterns are clear. The pressure rises. But the question stays open. Chapter 3. Aftermath, Accountability, and the Cost. Night settles over Kingston, and the air hangs heavy after a long day. The mother in Seaview Gardens sits at the small table in her living room. Her son sleeps in the next room. The weight of the past weeks sits on her shoulders, pressing down with a force she can no longer ignore. She scrolls through messages from her workplace. None threaten her position outright, but each one hints at limits. Limits she is close to crossing. She knows she has reached the edge of what she can carry alone. The aftermath begins quietly. Her body feels the cost before her mind admits it. She wakes with headaches. Her chest feels tight in the mornings. She takes longer to fall asleep. Her schedule has no room for rest. She moves through the day on instinct. She helps her son with homework. She prepares meals. She washes clothes. Her patience thins. Her spirit stretches. She hides the strain because showing it solves nothing. She knows she isn't the only one living like this. The truth brings no comfort. In Chicago, the winter wind scrapes across the south side. The mother there sits on the edge of her bed after another long shift. Her daughter sleeps under a heavy blanket. A notice from her landlord rests on the dresser, a warning about late rent. She is not behind yet, but the letter signals how narrow her margin has become. She calculates her remaining hours for the month. She checks the transit schedule. She checks the grocery list. Every number feels tight. Every decision carries consequence. The emotional toll has settled deep. She feels it when she stands up too fast, when she forgets small details, when she snaps at herself mistakes that come from exhaustion. She knows the advocate would tell her to seek support. She knows the city offers programs, though few apply cleanly to her situation. She knows the process takes time she does not have. Survival keeps her moving forward, even as the ground underneath her shifts. Experts in both cities have been tracking these patterns for years. In Kingston, a sociologist at the university explains the structural gaps in a measured tone. She says that urban life once relied on extended families clustered near each other. Those patterns have changed. Costs rose. People moved for work. Neighborhood networks thinned. She points to studies showing that mothers without reliable support face higher rates of burnout and economic instability. She stresses that these outcomes are not personal failings. They are predictable results of systems that assume endless resilience. In Chicago, a public policy researcher echoes the same point. He pulls up charts showing childcare shortages across the region. He explains how low-wage jobs with unstable hours make it impossible for mothers to plan ahead. He refers to long-standing documentation about transportation deserts, scheduling practices, and wage stagnation. None of the data is new. The crisis only grows because the underlying problems remain unaddressed. He calls it a slow erosion. Quiet, steady, and costly. The Kingston mother feels the erosion in her daily routine. One morning she tries to rise and finds her body fighting her. She gets up anyway because she has no choice. Her son needs breakfast. Her job needs her on time. She stands in front of the mirror and notices the fatigue in her eyes. She presses her palms against the sink and breathes slow. She doesn't know how long she can keep this pace. She has stopped planning for the future. She focuses on surviving the day. The Chicago mother feels the erosion in moments of silence. Late at night, she sits in the kitchen and stares at the floor. Her daughter needs a winter coat. The rent might rise next year. Her manager has cut her hours again. How long will she work? And she feels trapped in a cycle she didn't choose. She pushes her fear aside because fear doesn't change the math. She reminds herself that she is strong. The words feel thin. Accountability should answer these problems, but the structure around these women remains fragmented. Government agencies point to upcoming proposals. Employers cite operational demands. Community programs do what they can with what they have. Everyone acknowledges the reality. No one absorbs the cost. In Kingston, a local council meeting addresses childcare access. Officials offer careful phrases about future planning. They cite constraints. They note the pressure on the current system. The community worker listens from the back of the room. She has heard these promises before. She knows the mothers she serves do not have the luxury of waiting for reform. Their crises happen in real time. In Chicago, a committee releases a report outlining predictable failures in support systems. The findings mirror previous years, long wait lists, inconsistent funding, employer practices that strain households, transportation barriers, mental health pressures. The report reaches the news cycle briefly before fading. No clear action follows. The mothers impacted by these findings feel no shift in their daily lives. Accountability weakens when responsibility spreads across institutions that do not coordinate. Each group plays a small part. None hold the entire burden. The gap between acknowledgement and action widens. The mothers fall into that gap. The aftermath for the Kingston mother sharpens when her supervisor calls her into the office. He tells her the company will adjust her schedule for the next month. It is not punishment. It is a warning. She nods quietly. She holds her son tighter that night. She considers asking her mother for more help, but she knows the older woman has limits of her own. She pushes the thought aside. In Chicago, the mother's second job cuts another shift. She stares at the schedule board, feeling a cold weight build in her chest. She heads home early, not because she wants rest, but because she needs time to rethink her finances. She feels herself slipping toward a crisis. She cannot slow down. Experts warn about this pattern. When mothers lack support, any small disruption can trigger long-term consequences. Missed wages, strained health, reduced work stability, emotional fatigue. Studies show that the burden compounds, turning daily stress into chronic strain. The Kingston sociologist calls it a social debt. The Chicago researcher calls it predictable fallout. Both point to solutions that require investment, coordination, and political will. Some programs in both cities show results. In Kingston, a pilot initiative providing transportation vouchers helped mothers regain lost hours. In Chicago, a neighborhood partnership offering flexible childcare reduced absenteeism. They operate on small scales. The challenge is scaling them across entire cities. The mothers living with the strain rarely see these improvements reach their neighborhoods. In the final stretch of the chapter, the weight of the truth settles. These women are not living unusual lives. They are living common ones. Their stories reflect a broader reality across urban centers where support systems weaken while expectations rise. The consequences land hardest on those with the least margin for error. The question becomes, what is left when mothers lose strength? The answer is not theoretical. It is real, visible, and growing. Children feel the impact. Workplaces feel it. Entire communities feel it. The cost does not stay contained within the households. It spreads outward. The Kingston mother stands at her doorway one night and watches the streetlights hum. She thinks about how different her life would look with a reliable support system. She imagines a day where she is not rushing, not panicking, not calculating every minute. She wonders if that day will ever come. The Chicago mother finishes her shift and steps into the cold. She walks her daughter home through dimly lit streets. She imagines a world where her schedule is stable, her childcare reliable, her wages steady. She wonders what she could accomplish if she weren't constantly fighting to stay afloat. Both mothers walk through their separate cities carrying the same burden. The structure around them remains unchanged. The strain continues. The question from the start still hangs in the air.